Hearing on Valentine's Day.
Oh, right.
Yeah, 6 o'clock.
I bet that went well.
Actually, I was having.
All right, we're continuing with Senate File 1. We left off with amendments. I know Senator Pappas had one, and I think Senator Fischbach, you had offered the amendment. So that's where we were.
Senator Fischbach
Mr. Chair,
got hers added.
I don't think, I offered mine. Mine was adopted, but I don't believe there was one on the floor when we left.
No, there wasn't. Okay. But I'm just remembering that there were folks who indicated they had amendments. So now that we're all back together, does anybody? Senator Nino.
I do have amendments, Mr. Chair, and I may have a couple of other questions. Mr. Chair, the first amendment that I would like to offer is the A101. And, Mr. Chair, as that's being handed out, I do have a handout that could go with that.
Okay, if we can have that distributed. Senator Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The amendment essentially just puts back in place the MCHA, Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association. And if Senator Lori wants to explain more of his bill, his particular provision of the bill to the non-health committee members, he can go into that, or I can do that, Mr. Chair. But the short version is that this is our high-risk pool. These are the people typically sickest cannot get insurance elsewhere. The only way you get into this pool is if you've been turned down in the market. And the Affordable Care Act was not going to let us continue this. Members in this pool were going to be required to go into the federal pool. On Friday, and this is an article that I handed out, on Friday made the news that this pool is going to be closed. And, Mr. Chair, if this pool is closed to Minnesotans, then where are they going to go? MCHA is working for them now, and I think that would be the place for them to go.
Mr. Chair, Senator Enow, while I certainly understand the importance of this topic and this issue, there's 26,000 individuals in Minnesota today covered by MCHA. And we want to create a situation where we have the smoothest transition into other coverage as possible for this, high-need population. You described it properly that these are individuals who were denied coverage on the private market, and Minnesota has a long tradition of making sure that this high-risk pool is available for individuals. Prior to introduction of this, the MCHA board had put together a 3-year phase-out plan because, honestly, with the advent of guaranteed issue, it is no longer the case that individuals will be denied coverage on the on the private market. So the core need for MCHA does go away. We still need to provide for a smooth transition away, and these are medically involved individuals, and we want to make sure that we do that as well as we can. The understanding for a very long time, and then I was supportive, as everyone was, with a 3-year phase-out plan for MCHA. The issue came when, 2 months ago, the feds issued guidance about what a final rule might be that suggested that the way in which reinsurance pools were going to be operated wasn't going to segregate the funds so that Minnesota's MCHA withhold. It's a 3% premium tax, essentially, on the fully insured market. And so, I mean, honestly, I think it would be unwise to just say we're going to keep that up forever. We're trying to reduce those costs. The MCHA board chair was in to see me just last week. It's about $180 million a year borne by small employers and individuals on the private market. And so we really need to have a phase-out plan. But when the feds had that preliminary guidance that indicated that Minnesota's MCHA program would not be able to access those funds, it means about $60 million to the state in funds that we could otherwise get for our high-risk population. So that kind of begged the question as to whether we needed to step up that phase-out. It certainly would have to come with additional tools and resources to make sure that transition, again, happens as smoothly as possible for these individuals. But they will no longer be denied coverage on the individual market. So we want to pay close attention to their needs, but we want to make sure that we're able to gain the maximum amount of federal support to move us forward. At this time, I had the executive director of MCHA in to see me and their lobbyists just last week. I've worked with Commerce, as have they, and the language that's in the bill is fully supported by the MCHA board, which gives the authority for Commerce in consultation with the MCHA board to craft the best phase-out plan. I should also put this in the context that we do expect that was a guidance that was issued a couple of months ago, and we've been lobbying very hard to try to make it so that our MCHA mechanism is able to draw down those federal funds from the insurance pools created, the reinsurance pools created. And we expect final rules on that in, late March is what I've been told. And so before we get out of session this year, we should have a much better idea of what is available to us and can probably do a better job of talking about what a phase out might look like. But for this stage of the game, the crafting that's in the bill for MCHA is supported by MCHA and by Commerce, and we understand that there's going to be work needed to help support these high need individuals, and we all stand fully committed to making sure that work occurs. But the way I would oppose the A101 amendment, it just calls for a blanket forever continuance of MCHA, and that would be on the backs of our small employers, really, which I think is unwise. We're looking forward to getting rid of the MCHA assessment that the fully insured market has borne.
Senator Neal.
Mr. Chair, believe it or not, I think Senator Laurie actually argued my case while saying he opposes it. What he said is, we don't know what's going to happen here. So let's pass the bill and find out what happens later. I don't think that's a good plan. And he also said that we will find out what's going to happen when the feds give us information in late March, well before we're out of session. The amendment that we have before us says, let's go with what we know and what we know works, number one. And then when the feds come out with their details, late March, early April, whenever that might be, while we're still in the middle of session, we could take a look and see if we could pass something that makes sense. Now, the MCHA board and all of the support that was garnered previously was before this pool closed. This pool is going to be closed, I think, March 2nd at the latest. I don't know what the date is for Minnesota. I'm assuming that these individuals that expressed support in the past have not gotten together and recertified all of the support since Friday. Maybe they have, maybe they haven't. We don't have to keep MCHA in place in perpetuity, but I think we should keep it in place at least until we know what is going to happen. And it's interesting. I'm having a little bit of deja vu. This is going back to a relatively a lengthy discussion we had on the floor, some floor debate, about a series of amendments that were offered by myself and by Senator Benson on the Medicaid expansion bill. And the argument at the time was we should put a sunset in here and go back to the way it was if the federal money starts to disappear. Now, how prescient that turned out to be, because here we are. ACA is changing because the money's going away. They don't have the money to do this. So let's at least keep what we know is working for now, and when it makes sense to change it in the context of knowledge, then let's change it in April or even into May. We have procedures for doing that for important bills. I've been around here long enough to see bills show up on a Monday and go through rules and get passed on a Wednesday. We can do those things. But this is, this is not a politically powerful group, but these are people with real serious health concerns. For those of you that don't serve on the Health and Human Services Committees, you might not be aware of that. But these are people with real serious health concerns. I think we should hold this in place and just do the right thing until we know what really might be possible or not.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nenow, this is an interesting Washington Post article, but it's completely unrelated as it, as you look at it. If you look at the, fourth or fifth paragraph, it was supposed to last until 2014. MCHA does last until 2014. This is the high-risk pool that the feds put in place to support high-risk individuals for states that don't have a high-risk pool like Minnesota does. MCHA is going to continue through 2014. The need for high-risk pools goes away when there's guaranteed issue on the market. This is a completely different issue than continuing MCHA beyond 2014. This article is in regards to the high-risk pool that lasts until guaranteed issue is available. I would oppose the A101 amendment.
Further discussion on the amendment. Mr. Brickwitty, did you?
Mr. Chair, Peter Brickwitty from the Department of Commerce. I would echo Senator Lori that the Washington Post article is not dealing with an issue that is not pertinent to the Minnesota Comprehensive Health Association. So I would echo Senator Lori's comments there.
All right, we have Senator Nino's motion on the A101 amendment. Is there further discussion? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
No.
Motion fails. Further discussion or amendments on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I do.
Senator Nino.
Yeah, I do have one additional amendment.
Do you know which?
That is the A98.
Okay, if we could have that distributed, please.
Thank you.
You got to come here first. You got to come here first.
Sir Nino.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The A98 would prevent implementation of the exchange law, if we want to call it that, bill, until we're able to get what is an extremely important and now quite overdue audit that is the result of Governor Dayton's executive order. Governor Dayton issued an executive order requiring an audit of these plans, and these are what we are expanding with the Medicaid expansion and what people were getting into using the exchange. And the contract specified that we would get a written report, including an assessment of the rate-setting process, including the rates, to determine whether they're proper, whether we're paying proper rates to the HMOs that will be participating in the exchange, presumably be participating in the exchange, whether we're getting what we're paying for as far as service to the clientele for whom we're paying insurance premiums. In the contract, and the commissioner herself, when this was put out for RFP, says that time is of the essence because this is important information. Now, this was due, contractually due, on July 31st. We were supposed to get information on this audit. Now, that has not shown up anywhere. I sent the letter to the commissioner, emailed that, and sent a hard copy asking, where is this? What do we have? If we don't have anything, I have a series of questions that I'd like answered. I have not received a response from the department in any fashion, whether there's a legitimate delay or whether there's a problem or what time frame to expect. I've not received any response. I did also have my office send a letter to the contracting company, Seagull, S-E-G-A-L, Seagull. I've not heard a response yet from them. Members, you might or might not be aware of the fact that our prepaid medical assistance plans, the money that we pay for welfare Medicaid, is currently under federal investigation. The Office of Inspector General is in here. We've had other federal investigations that might or might not still be ongoing. Partly as a result of that, I believe anyway, the governor issued an executive order requiring this audit. We have not seen any of that. We don't know what the underlying numbers are, whether they're good, bad, beautiful, not. The governor saw it important enough to try to find out, to issue an executive order, set a deadline. I do believe the contract even specifies penalties if the deadline is met, and we don't have anything. But yet we're going full throttle ahead with something that is unaudited. We don't know about the report on actuarial soundness or whether the rate setting is appropriate or inappropriate, whether we're underpaying or overpaying on these rates. I could go on and on and on with the concerns that have been uncovered through these various investigations and legislative actions out of my office and some others, and even at the federal legislative area. Members, we're going to be spending billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars a year. Even the governor agreed that we should get this audit, but we don't have it. So let's make it a requirement. Maybe we could light a fire under the department to get going in getting this release to us by requiring that this be done. And maybe the department would want to talk to what the delay is. I don't know if they know or not.
I'm not sure, certainly, you know, if anybody wishes to comment, but Senator Lurie?
Mr. Chair, Senator Nino, I would oppose the A98 amendment. I mean, I think stopping the exchange to wait for this is not good public policy. I mean, I think that it is important that we get the results, and I was supportive of Governor Dayton and his executive order, and I too anxiously await what it is. But no matter what the audit finds, it wouldn't be the conclusion that we should do nothing. I think we need to move ahead and have the nuts and bolts in place to be able to offer insurance products on the marketplace that will be known as the exchange. And if we need to do some further work based on that audit report regarding how we craft plans to populate the market, that's actually kind of a different issue than the nuts and bolts that you'll find in Senate File 1. So I think linking these two and delaying the good work of the administration and getting ready to operate an exchange is a separate issue, and I would oppose the A98 amendment.
Okay. Further discussion on the A98 amendment. Senator Engelbertson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm not understanding, Senator Lurie, that you support the governor's decision on something here, but then again you don't. I'm not understanding that. Do you have anybody from the department here that could answer to why this report is not done? Is there somebody here?
Senator Ingebrigtsen, why would I have somebody from the department to answer this question? This is the first time I've seen the amendment. You know, I don't just pull members of the department out of my pocket, you know, to answer any question that may or may not come up. I mean, I do want to see the results of this audit. But regardless of the results of this audit, the exchange should be there to help Minnesotans find the right insurance product for them. if the findings of the audit are such that we need to do some work on what products look like, that's a separate piece of work. And linking these two and slowing down implementation of the exchange that is the marketplace that will provide these products. It's not developing them. So I think that stopping the development of the exchange itself would be unwise and would oppose the A98 amendment.
Certainly no.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This doesn't stop this bill. It would stop implementation if we never get this report. If we get the report and it's really, really bad, it doesn't stop the implementation. It simply requires that we actually do get this report. Now, it's nearly 3 weeks overdue at this point. I would assume that it's pretty much done. Unless they're not able to get the data and the information that they need to do the audit. And if that is the case, absolutely, we don't know what's going on. We could be spending tens of billions of dollars more than we should be for services that aren't getting to our constituents and to the residents of Minnesota. And if that's what's going on, then we should stop the exchange, because we should not build an infrastructure that allows that kind of waste to be in our healthcare system. So, Mr. Chair, unless the concern is that we're not going to get this audit, this is a good provision to guarantee that we get this in our hands and we actually see what has happened there.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Lurie, do you think the audit that is not being produced at this point, that would that change your fiscal note that we have in front of us here?
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, I'm not aware of anything that would change the fiscal note based on anything in that audit. The exchange is to be able to offer insurance products and assist people to select the right product. If the I don't know what this audit is going to find. I don't know, we anxiously await it, but the exchange, this is the nuts and bolts of how it functions to create that marketplace and make those products available. It's not about creation of those products. If there's additional work that needs to be done, I fully expect that we will see this audit. It was, it was in the executive order. I would assume it's forthcoming. Maybe there is somebody from the department that I don't know.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chair and Senator Lurie, can you help me out? Which department that's listed on the top of our fiscal note here that the prepaid medical assistance program, does that fall under? Is that the Human Services Department?
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, it's the Department of Human Services. Yes.
Thank you.
Senator Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for either Senator Lurie or maybe Senator Nina. When is this report due, or when was the audit due?
The contract specified. Sorry, Mr. Chair. The contract specified that we were to have information by January 31st.
Mr. Chair, Senator Nina, of 2013. So it's a month and a half later. I don't even know what the date
is. Mr. Chair, we're about 3 weeks overdue.
20 days over?
Yeah, about 3 weeks overdue.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Lurie, you've indicated that you do support the governor in his request or his order for this report. And candidly, I am not familiar with the report. Could you explain to me what your understanding is of the purpose of the report? What is the governor trying to obtain information on?
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, we seem to be straying quite a bit from Senate File 1 again, but the report, the audit that was the subject of the executive order last year sometime is to look into the financial dealings of Minnesota carriers in their operations of the prepaid medical assistance program for Medicaid.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Lurie, I appreciate your patience. I don't think that we are necessarily straying from Senate file number one, because we are dealing with an amendment that we are discussing. And it just seems to me that if we've got an audit report that's overdue, is going to address what you have just described, why would we not want that information before we go forward with your bill? Because it does indeed deal with the intricacies of your exchange bill. Why the opposition to waiting until we have got the report that the governor has ordered?
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, I'm going to say the same thing. Whatever the audit says, it'll say. In either case, we need an exchange, which is the tools to help Minnesotans find health insurance. I mean, it's just a core fact that the Affordable Care Act is intended to help individuals find an insurance product. There are going to be insurance products. They need to be available on the exchange. We need to continue work on the exchange. Making sure that we understand the actuarial basis behind the products that are populated is critical work, and I fully support it. But throwing additional barriers in to potentially derail the implementation of the exchange is not something I'm going to support.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Lurie, I really appreciate your patience here, but understand not everybody. I think this is the second time I've heard this, and you've carried 9 stops or 10 stops, something like that. So bear with us if we're sounding like we need some help with some of this. But you yourself are saying we need continued work on this. Now, I'm understanding, according to the previous session this afternoon, that March 31st is kind of the drop-dead date. Is that agreed upon? I think that's what we discussed earlier. That's a long time between now and then, with it being not quite 2 weeks overdue for this report that the administration ordered by way of executive order. It would seem to me that it would be reasonable to delay this bill or go along with this amendment, because that's a long time between now and the 31st, and you know what that means around here. I mean, 10 minutes is a long time around here, so I think this is reasonable, and I would ask members to slow this down a little bit here until we get that report and come back and deal with it.
Yeah, we have Senator Nino's motion on the A98 amendment. Is there further discussion, Senator Nino?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to highlight that we are not outside the purview of the Finance Committee in talking about this amendment. Senator Lurie kind of thought we're straying far and away. This audit report is supposed to come back and tell us if we're paying too much or too little or just right. And if it comes back and says we're paying too much, that's got fiscal implications for the state of Minnesota. And I think that's extraordinarily important. The contract itself says time is of the essence. That's in the contract. That's a quote. Mr. Chair, I guess I think this is an important issue. I would ask for a roll call vote on this.
Okay. Senator Nino has moved the A90 amendment with a request for roll call. If the clerk will take the roll.
Anderson?
Yes.
Bonoff? Champion?
No.
Dibble?
No.
Fishbach? Goodwin?
No.
Ingebrigtsen?
Yes.
Latz? Limmer? Lurie?
No.
Miller?
Yes.
Newman?
Yes.
Nino?
Yes.
Pappas? Peterson?
Yes.
Saxog?
No.
Sieben?
No.
Stumpf?
No.
Tomasoni?
No.
Westrum?
Yes.
Uyghur?
No.
Bonhoff? Latz? Limmer? Pappas? Cohen?
No. Okay, on a vote of 8-10, motion fails. Further discussion or amendments? Senator Lurie?
Mr. Chair, I've got the A68 amendment.
Can I have that distributed? Senator Lurie.
Mr. Chair, thank you. This was actually going to be offered by Senator Pappas, but I do know that there's concurrent committees running at the same time. This deals with the Minnesota Office of Enterprise Technology, MINET, as it's often known as, and a little history. When this bill was initially introduced, there was a complete exemption from 16E, which is the statute that describes the MINET responsibilities, and that seemed too much in the initial stop that we had, which was Senator Pappas's state and local, and that exemption was completely removed from the bill. Upon further reflection, as we worked on it, it became clear that given the unique and hybrid nature of this entity and its need to be able to operate efficiently, that a complete application of 16E might also not be the right approach. So from the two extremes, complete exemption to complete application, there was a review of the statutes, and this is a list of the paragraphs within that statute that could hamper the nimbleness of the marketplace to function. So I offer the A68 amendment.
Okay. Further discussion on the A68 amendment? If not, Sir Nino?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not having a statute book in front of me, I'm trying to use my smartphone as quickly as I can. Could we have maybe counsel walk us through what these specific provisions are that we're creating exemptions for?
About it.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Nino, I can take an attempt at that. 16E.01, subdivision 3, paragraph B, provides that the chief information officer has to determine when it's cost-effective for agencies to develop and use certain shared information and technology systems. 16E.03, subdivisions 3 and 4 provide that a state agency may not undertake an information and telecommunications technology project until it's been evaluated by OET. And subdivision 4 specifies what that procedure is. 16E.04, subdivision 1, relates to a set of policies and standards for developing and purchasing information technology. And let's see. Subdivision 2, paragraph E, provides that, again, the office reviews and approves agency requests for grant funding that have an information and technology component. Obviously, much of this is related to the oversight authority that the agency has. 16E.0465 provides that any appropriation of more than $1 million of state or federal funds must flow through OET before it can be used to purchase those items for approval. 16E.055
provides that a state agency implementing electronic government services for fees, licenses, sales, et cetera, must use a single entry site created by the chief information officer. 16E.145 provides that an appropriation for state agency information and telecommunications technology project actually has to be made directly to the chief information officer, and it must be managed and dispersed by the chief information officer. 16E.15 deals with software sales and allows the chief information officer to sell or license software products or services developed by agencies. 16E.16 provides that the chief information officer may require a state agency to adjust operating and management procedures to take advantage of improved technology systems and procedures. And 16E.17 provides that the chief information officer must supervise and control all state telecommunication facilities and services. I think this is more hardware related, and it basically provides complete authority over all methods of transmitting that information. 16E.18 gives the Office of Enterprise Technology authority over the state information infrastructure and requires that the Office of Enterprise Technology ensure a variety of cost-effective methods of using those technologies. I think, 16E.18, that's basically 16E.18 in a nutshell. There's a theme definitely emerging here. 16E.22 relates to the statewide electronic licensing system and requires, I think, in effect, all agencies to use the statewide electronic licensing system. And Mr. Nauman informs me that I need to review 16E.04, subdivision 3, paragraph B for you. And this requires that agencies, there's an underlying requirement to develop a risk assessment and risk management plan for information systems. And paragraph B says that it has to be paid for with money appropriated for the information and telecommunications technology project. I think that completes the list of sections.
So, Mr. Chair, an important thing to note about this is that these exemptions would only apply to the private market side of the health insurance exchange. All IT information related to the DHS side, the Medicaid side of the house, OET would still have all these powers and the consolidation on the DHS, the public side of the equation. Just an important clarification.
All right. Further discussion, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator. You may have clarified my question already. These fees that are that they have the ability to charge in statute now would be to the private sector. Constantly through there is reviewing and charging licensing fees is what I'm talking about. That's to the private insurance companies that we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. Are there any counties? Is there any going to be any? I think we may have even discussed this before. The cost to the counties I'm concerned about. When I have a commissioner come through the door and ask me, I'm not sure if this amendment covers that, but is there going to be more fees for the county to be able to participate? They won't be participating in this.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen, this wouldn't have an effect on counties. The fees that they were talking about in here were if the exchange develops products that are wildly successful and another state wishes to purchase them, that could be a potential funding stream for the exchange that could reduce the fees that they would need to support operations otherwise. It's one of the things that we gave them in the bill, and so allowing them to benefit if they're able to market and sell some of the products that they come up with.
Senator Fischbach. I'm sorry. Senator Peterson. Yeah,
Mr. Chair and Senator Laurie, I think in your summary you told me that Senator Pappas put this amendment on in local government. Was that accurate?
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, upon introduction of the bill, there was a complete exemption from 16E broadly. And, you know, IT consolidation is an important aspect of what the state has decided to do. And in deference to that, we took that exemption out in its entirety and made all of 16E apply. But those are the two extremes. And as we've been working with the bill, you know, there was a reason why the complete exemption was in there in the first place, and neither extreme seemed to be the right place to be. And so we instead went through 16E and found the paragraphs that could hamper the nimbleness and the ability of the marketplace to operate, the exchange to operate in the new marketplace. And so that's what we have before us here, is a very specific line item of the paragraphs that could assist the exchange in being nimble enough to meet the incredible task we're laying in front of them.
So, Mr. Chair and Senator Lurie, so if this is relating to IT consolidation, how does it affect the fiscal note of the work of the Finance Committee here? Shouldn't this be taken out back in local government rather than in finance?
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, it doesn't affect the fiscal note. And, you know, I think as we've demonstrated clearly, all amendments are germane, really. I mean, you can offer them anywhere. This is Senator Pappas and I were working on this. You know, Senator Fischbach had an amendment that related to some of the earlier work done in state and local that I'd worked with Senator Benson on as well, that we'd been working with Senator Pappas on. This is in keeping with the spirit of the amendments that have been offered in this committee and the further work that this bill has been going through.
Mr. Chair, I think it's fair to say that Minnesota's Constitution single subject rule certainly applies. And, you know, if Mr. Boddard would be willing to check that, and I do have a note on that, it's Mason's Manual Section 402, which I think, you know, clearly, you know, demonstrates that committees try to avoid legislating outside their jurisdiction. And again, we're in the Finance Committee, and Senator Lurie is offering an amendment that deals with information technology consolidation. Is that in the purview of your Finance Committee?
Senator Peterson, you know, there's a fine line when you talk about consolidation of agencies' responsibilities within the agencies. There's always a fiscal implication when you talk about consolidation or changing what the structure of state government is.
Mr. Chair, you know, again, to that point, I would encourage members. This is an amendment that was added in local government by Senator Pappas, who's the chair of that. I mean, I think you should consider sending this bill back to local government where that amendment was put on. Because this is, in my view, according to Mason's Manual, Section 402, and we can check that if you would allow us to do that. I think members may agree that this, that the single subject rule does apply in this case, and it doesn't fall under the Finance Committee.
Senator Peterson, if somebody wants to check Mason's, they can do so, and certainly if you want to make a motion on a re-referral of the bill to local government, that motion is certainly in order. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Lurie, if the purpose of the A68 amendment is to give you the nimbleness that you require, who is going to have the oversight over the IT consolidation and the regulation over that IT consolidation that is being effectively removed by these various 16E provisions? Who's going to be regulating it if it isn't OET?
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, OET is not really a regulatory agency. They're overseeing proper IT consolidation, but not from a regulatory perspective, just from a sound business practice perspective. And most of that would still apply. There are aspects of it that would maybe not work in this unique new role that we have for the exchange, and that's what we're trying to get at. And there certainly would still be a great degree of coordination and interagency agreements to oversee this work and ensure that the work is doing progressing with the best practices, and also the feds have significant regulatory authority over making sure that the IT components are done according to spec, and so there's an entire regulatory framework over it as well.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick follow-up question, Senator Lurie. I am personally not familiar with 16E statutes, but it appears to me that what we are doing is exempting the Minnesota Insurance Marketplace from complying with those. So my follow-up question, if it isn't regulatory, then who will be responsible for practicing the sound business practices that you've just described that we are obviously exempting the marketplace from complying with?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ingebrigtsen,
Yes. Just kidding.
Senator Newman, apologies. It's been a long day.
Yes, it has.
It's been a long session. The exchange will be implementing the IT in regards to these pieces, for the private side of the health insurance exchange. The regulatory environment doesn't really change. There's still an incredibly sound, data practices. It doesn't change data practices. It doesn't change the federal regulations over their IT infrastructure. It allows the exchange some flexibility from, pre-approval by OET of hardware and software purchases that may need to be done in order to operate in this marketplace efficiently.
Mr. Chairman, then Senator Lurie, would I be correct then that the board that is being established under this bill would be responsible for the sound business practices under 16E?
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, they would be responsible and liable and overseen with an entire regulatory structure, yes.
Thank you, Senator Lurie. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Newman.
Mr. Chair, I'm just trying to engross this amendment, and I'm having a hard time with the two copies that we've been handed out. What version are we working off of? How's this engrossed to?
Second committee engrossment.
With the second engrossment, which I think is the Division 1.
Maybe council could help. Maybe there is a... Maybe the A68. Sure,
we adopted the division report, but we were working off of the CE2 engrossment, I believe, the second engrossment.
Mr. Chair, as this is drafted, it doesn't fit there.
I guess it should read on line 1.2 there, the way I read it. Senator Ninau is correct. It should say page 4 after line 25. Insert rather than line 16. It's drafted to a previous version of the bill, evidently. But if it says page 4 after line 25, insert, it's a paragraph E.
Sir, let me ask Mr. Bodron just to clarify this for us.
So, Mr. Chairman, to draft it properly to the CE2 amendment, Senator Lurie is correct on line 1.2 of the amendment. It should read page 4 after line 25. Insert, and then on line 1.3, paragraph E should be G. There will be a new paragraph G at the end of that.
Senator Lurie incorporates that into his A68 amendment. Further discussion, Senator Peterson, I think. Did you? Am I wrong? Okay, if there's no further discussion, we have Senator Lurie's motion, the A68 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Motion carries. Further amendments or discussion?
I heard you both
sides. If there's no further discussions, Senator Lurie moves that Senate File 1, as amended, be recommended to pass.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ninau.
I would move that we postpone that to a time certain of March 1st, 9 a.m. at a regular committee time.
Okay, we have Senator Ninau's motion in front of us. All those
Mr.
in favor?
Chair, I'd like to speak to that.
I'm sorry, Senator Ninau. Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We've had a lengthy discussion in this committee We could have had a much more lengthy discussion if we had wanted to get into some of the policy concerns that are in here, but that is not the purview of this committee, the most recent amendment notwithstanding. Mr. Chair, there are, from a fiscal standpoint, tremendous concerns with this bill. We had a motion previously to table the bill. I can see where that's a more aggressive maneuver than what I have just put before the committee here. We had this discussion earlier. We have the February forecast coming out. If we take this up on March 1st, there is absolutely no reason why, assuming the will of the committee is to pass this bill, there's no reason why we can't take this up in full knowledge of what the budget really will be that we're dealing with, or the budget numbers. We don't have targets yet for divisions, at least not publicly made available. So with this hole in the general fund, we don't even know what we're dealing with there. We have a fiscal note that I pointed out to the committee has possibly $1 million inflation buried on page 9, I believe it was. What else is in there, and how many 47-page fiscal notes do you see? Not a lot. We've got concerns about, I've expressed this in the policy committee to Senator Lurie, some concerns about legislative oversight. The HHS policy committee did create a legislative oversight entity, but they really have no authority to do anything. We have board members that get appointed by the governor, and once they're confirmed, are accountable to no one but themselves. I don't know if you saw that in the bill, members. I didn't really talk about it before, but they can only remove themselves from office. There is no other mechanism for them to be removed from office. They determine their own budget. They determine what their expenses are and will be, and the commissioner is directed to certify those. There are no criteria given to the commissioner as to what might or might not qualify that certification. There are no criteria for the commissioner in this bill for the commissioner to review certification and deny certification. The commissioner is directed to certify what the board proposes. And then that money is automatically, July 1st, taken out of the health impact fund, and anything that's left over sent into the general fund where we get to direct it. Now, maybe those are all fine, but given the fact that we've got a $20, $30 million hit to the general fund in this coming biennium, and $118 million hit to the general fund in the out biennium, I think we owe it to ourselves as the Finance Committee to at least wait 10 days or whatever that might be until March 1st so that we really know the numbers we're dealing with. And members, I don't want to belabor this any more than I have to, but we could talk about other concerns in the bill as well. But as a Finance Committee, holding this bill over to March 1st, taking a vote in full knowledge of what the budget numbers are, is not going to prevent passage of this bill and an enactment by March 31st. We could take a shorter Easter Passover recess. We could not go into recess. We have all kinds of options, but I would hope the priority is not that we can go take a recess instead of looking at the most fundamental change in health insurance probably in the history of the state of Minnesota, affecting hundreds of millions of dollars out of the general fund that we have no idea how we're going to deal with. All I'm asking is that we wait until March 1st, and I would request a roll call vote, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Senator Nino moves that Senate File 1 be laid on the table until the date certain of March 1st of 2013. As asked for a roll call, the clerk will take the roll. The chairman votes no.
Anderson.
Yes.
Bonoff. Champion.
No.
Dibble.
No.
Fishbach.
Yes.
Goodwin.
No.
Ingebrigtsen.
Yes.
Latz. Limmer. Lori.
No.
Miller.
Yes.
Newman.
Yes.
Nino.
Yes.
Pappas. Peterson.
Yes.
Saxog.
No.
Sieben.
No.
Stumpf.
No.
Tomasoni.
No.
Westrom.
Yes.
Uyghur.
No.
Bonhoff. Latz. Limmer.
Yes.
Pappas.
Oh.
Latz.
No.
I love it.
You never know what a Harvard degree will do for you.
Mr. Chair, do I need to give another speech about rules?
The roll call was not completed. The same way Senator Limmer voted, Senator Latz voted.
It was good.
I voted twice, though.
On a vote of 9 aye, 11 nay, the motion fails. Senator Laurie again moves that Senate File 1 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Rules. Is Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and that was interesting to say the least. But to the chair, with our earlier discussion, your displeasure with the way it's being funded, and some comments about the tax chair. Since that meeting, have you had an opportunity to talk to, I believe it's Senator Scoy, at all about this at all, or you still have any concerns as to the funding mechanism so far?
Senator Person, I did have a chance to talk briefly with Senator Scoy, and we discussed how we might handle this, and I think there's some answers to how this might be handled. So I'm not 100% satisfied or pleased, but more so than I was this morning. Senator Nino.
Mr. Chair, might we have those answers before March 1st?
I would guess there'll be a chance of that.
Mr. Chair, having voted on the prevailing side, you could move to reconsider my previous motion.
Thanks for the advice. Appreciate that. So we have Senator Laurie's motion again.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Has a roll call been requested? If not,
no.
I would like to request one.
All right. Senator Fischbach requests a roll call. And again, Senator Laurie's motion, just so everybody understands it, that Senate File 1 as amended be recommended to pass, we refer to the Committee on Rules. If there's no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll. The chairman votes yes.
Anderson.
No.
Bonhoff. Champion.
Yes.
Dibble.
Yes.
Fischbach.
No.
Goodwin.
Yes.
Ingebrigtsen.
No.
Latz.
Yes.
Look over here.
Limmer.
No.
Lori.
Yes.
Miller.
No.
Newman.
No.
Nino.
No.
Pappas. Peterson.
No.
Saxog.
Yes.
Sieben.
Yes.
Stumpf.
Yes.
Tomasoni.
Yes.
Westrom.
No.
Uyghur.
Yes.
Bonhoff. Pappas.
On a vote of 11 yes, 9 no, the motion prevails. Bill is re-referred to the Rules Committee. Members, thank you for coming back this evening, and the meeting is adjourned.